Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. When Oregon joined the Union in 1859, it did so as a slave-free state. But not because it was taking a moral position. Oregon did not want slaveholders from the South bringing black people into a state that was established as a white utopia by white Christian Protestants. So Oregon's legislature put an exclusion clause in the state constitution, making it illegal to be black in Oregon. Generations later, while numerous cities known as sundown towns dotted the American landscape in every state and threatened the safety and lives of black Americans migrating north and west, all of Oregon was regarded as a sundown state. Today, the Oregon Remembrance Project, through its Sunrise Project, is doing the work of helping cities remember the conditions we all inherited from the not-so-distant past and engage in an educational process of transforming these former sundown monikers into a sunrise brand that welcomes and embraces a more diverse and multicultural population. Joining me on the exchange are two guests. Taylor Stewart is the founder and executive director of the Oregon Remembrance Project. Welcome, Taylor.
Oh, thank you for having me.
And Dr. Jeff Leland is a former adjunct professor at Southern Oregon University, where he taught for 20 years, and a retired archaeologist and historian for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest, where he served for 30 years. Welcome.
Thank you.
So, Taylor, let's start with you. Before we get into the work of the Oregon Remembrance Project and your network of Sunrise Cities, which includes Ashland and Grants Pass, talk about your background and the journey that led you to this mission.
Yeah, so I got started doing this work of historical reconciliation because of a civil rights trip I took to the American South. And I lived in Oregon my entire life, and I couldn't believe that I had to go all the way to Montgomery, Alabama, just to learn that there had been at least one widely documented lynching of an African-American here in Oregon. And so I came back to my home wanting to share that history with others. And so I got involved in an effort to memorialize African-American lynching victims in the communities where their lynchings took place. And so for 3 years, I worked with the community of Coos Bay, Oregon, to memorialize a man named Alonzo Tucker, Oregon's most widely documented African-American victim of lynching. February 2020, we held a soil collection ceremony near the spot of the lynching. In June 2021, we unveiled the historical marker in the community. And what all sort of started as an obscure personal side project grew into how I wanted to spend the rest of my life helping other individuals and communities with their own truth and reconciliation projects, because I saw the benefit that work had in not only my life, but the lives of those who I worked with in Coos Bay.
Well, quick question. What is a soil collection ceremony?
Yeah, so we collected soil from three different parts around the community of Coos Bay, with each bit of soil representing part of Alonzo Tucker's story. We collected soil from the mudflats where he had spent the night hiding from a mob that had formed with the intention of lynching him. We collected soil from Front Street where Alonzo Tucker was shot. And we collected soil from where the old Marshfield Bridge used to be, where the mob strung up Alonzo Tucker from a light pole. And we collected that soil and blessed it, and then transferred that soil into two jars, one that was turned into an exhibit at the Coos History Museum and the other that was sent back to a museum in Montgomery. And it was a really powerful experience for community members to be able to physically hold that story in their hands as they transferred the soil into two jars. And so we really appreciated that opportunity to make the first ever city acknowledgement of the lynching of Alonzo Tucker, and especially to have community involvement in terms of transferring the soil into the two jars.
Gotcha. It sounds quite unique, and I appreciate the work that you're doing. Jeff, take us back to when you were a kid growing up. Help us understand how you became interested in history and how that interest has directed your journey as an adult.
Well, I didn't come to Oregon until after I graduated from college back east in 1969. I came out here right after that. But I was... my father was in the U.S. Navy, an officer, and so I moved around all over during my growing up years, including in the South. And I had relatives, very close relatives. We even lived there with them for a while in the Tampa Bay area of Florida, very rural area, not urban at all. And having lived other places outside of Jim Crow South, it made an impression on me. I didn't take it for granted on seeing how the black tomato pickers of my uncle's big tomato farm down there, how they were treated, and it was almost like they were still living in slave quarters. So that made a big impression on me, and I went on to graduate from a racially segregated high school in Norfolk, Virginia in 1965. And I can't say that the civil rights history and the history of African Americans was primary in my mind as I studied history in college and subsequently. But after I moved to Oregon and started learning about Oregon, I definitely became interested in that. At that time, totally unknown history of black exclusion and so on and so forth in Oregon. And by the way, Taylor, about 10 or more years ago, I took a civil rights tour with a friend down south as well. Little Rock High School, the integration of the Little Rock High School, Montgomery, and Memphis, where MLK Jr. was assassinated, and so on and so forth. So
awesome.
And that was really something. So I did that same kind of tour.
My guests are Taylor Stewart, founder and executive director of the Oregon Remembrance Project, and Dr. Jeff LaLand, a former SOU adjunct professor and retired historian and archaeologist for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. Taylor, talk about the work of the Oregon Remembrance Project.
Yes. So I help communities with truth and reconciliation projects around repairing historical injustice. You know, the way I describe this work is that we are trying to turn pain into power. These stories of historical injustice often make us feel powerless, that we can't do anything about them. But I believe that we can't change the past, but we can always change our relationship to it, and that we have the power to write new endings to stories of historical injustice. I tell people that there are two dates of significance on the Alonzo Tucker historical marker, 1902 when the lynching occurred and 2021 when the historical marker was unveiled, and that we can't fully understand the story of Alonzo Tucker only focusing on the 1902 date, as his story now continues on into 2020 and 2021, when that same community where his lynching occurred used his memory as inspiration for becoming a community more committed to the ideals of truth, justice, and reconciliation. And so I try to do that same sort of transformational work when it comes to Oregon's history of sundown towns, black exclusionary laws, and KKK activity. I believe that those of us who are living right now, we can claim power in these stories by adding new chapters to these legacies through the work that we can do contemporarily.
So what do you hope to achieve?
You know, I hope that, so for instance, with the work around Alonzo Tucker, when we did the historical marker unveiling, it was also a part of Coos Bay's first ever Juneteenth celebration. And in the years since, it's been really amazing to watch the way that the community has continued the celebration of Juneteenth. Coos Bay last year celebrated their fourth annual Juneteenth. And believe it or not, but little old Coos Bay, I believe, has the largest Juneteenth event per capita in the state of Oregon. And for me, why do this work is the fact that community members, particularly African Americans in the Coos Bay area, are able to showcase their history, tradition, and culture, and to be able to showcase that history and to be considered an integral part of their community's identity. And so I see this historical reconciliation as one way to create avenues to actually improve the lived reality of people of color today. So in the case of our work around sundown towns, we're trying to develop these new identities as that of sunrise communities, the opposite to a sundown town, a place where everyone can feel safe, respected, and like they can call that space their home. And so I really feel that through this historical reconciliation, in the same way that people learn through doing, communities learn through doing, and by doing this work of trying to repair the past, I think that it actually improves the communities that we live in contemporarily.
Now, speaking of learning, Jeff, you were in the world of academia for a long time. What have you experienced in Oregon's approach to the issue of race in teaching history, civics, social studies, and economics in Oregon?
Boy, as you pointed out, I was an adjunct, and my teaching teaching career was fairly limited at SOU to teaching regional and kind of local history. But when I first began to study Oregon history, there was little, if any, mention of the so-called black exclusion laws that go back to Oregon's early pre-territorial history. And you pointed out very correctly in your intro about why those came to be, a white utopia where white people, some of whom were fleeing the effects of slavery in the border states, where the slave owners were getting richer and richer, and they did not want that kind of competition. At any rate, there's very little mention of that. And I've seen a great change in the textbooks, the state histories that have come out in, let's say, the past 20 years or so. It's been like a sea change that there is this recognition of this past history. Blacks were here in the very beginning of Oregon, if you will, and continue to be here despite this a bigoted, prejudiced beginning.
So, Taylor, when you talk about sundown towns, how far back along the historical timeline do we have to look to find sundown towns in Oregon?
Yeah, so sundown towns are a phenomenon that really sort of started between 1870 and 1930. So African Americans as a people group were more widely dispersed around the United States in 1870 than they were in 1930, when during that time period they were forced from rural communities into condensed urban settings. And so here in Oregon, 17 of Oregon's 32 counties had zero African Americans in them in the year 1870. But that number would rise to 28 of Oregon's 32 counties by the year 1930. And so during that turn of the century is when white individuals began forcing and becoming more open about their exclusion of African Americans across the United States. Sundown towns were more so spaces that were once interracial, that whites then pushed out their African American population. And so when we think about sundown towns in Oregon, you know, we are thinking about that turn towards the 1900s, but realistically, we can think about sundown towns in Oregon going all the way back to our foundation in 1859, as you mentioned, with the black exclusionary laws. And so, you know, as we will say, those black exclusionary laws came off the books in 1926, but that didn't necessarily mean they ended. They evolved into sundown towns. They evolved into restrictive covenants and gentrification, displacement, and the cultural expulsion that we still see around our state today. And so in our research, we are looking particularly around those 1920s, 1930s, and that's where we're getting most of our stories about the contemporary experience of sundown towns. And so, for instance, in Ashland, we have a story about the first black company member of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival who had to be transported from the theater to her hotel.
Hey, Taylor, hold that story. Hold that story. We're going to have to take a quick break, but I want to hear more about that story when we come back from the break. We'll be back with my guest, Taylor Stewart, founder and executive director of the Oregon Remembrance Project, and Dr. Jeff LaLand, a retired historian and archaeologist for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guests are Taylor Stewart, founder and executive director of the Oregon Remembrance Project, and Dr. Jeff LaLand, a former SOU adjunct professor and retired historian and archaeologist for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. Before the break, we were talking about the timetable of people who lived in Oregon's sundown towns. And Taylor, you were telling us about OSF here in Ashland.
Yes. So in 1950, a black woman named Patricia Norman was the Oregon Shakespeare Festival's first black company member when she was cast in a production of the play The Company of Errors. And due to Ashland's status as a sundown town, Patricia Norman was unable to find a place to stay around town over the summer. And so she had to stay at a dorm at then Southern Oregon College. And Norman had to be escorted from the theater to her hotel by bodyguards from the company for her own protection, because at that time there was a considerable amount of hostility from local residents. And to think that, you know, 1950 really isn't that long ago, and we actually have a picture of Patricia Norman for her in her production of The Company of Errors. And so a lot of, you know, unfortunately, we don't have too many physical documentations about the history of sundown towns. And so most of our understanding comes from oral history. And so that's one thing that we do through the Sunrise Project is collect these stories so that we can really build out our collective memory and our understanding of this era of life in Oregon.
Well, it's really interesting that there isn't that much documentation around this era, because the 1950s, Taylor, you're talking about our grandparents. This is not that long ago. Does that mean that grandparents and great-grandparents that are alive today live through this era of sundown towns?
Yes. If you lived outside of an urban center and you're over the age of 65, there's a very good chance that you lived in a sundown town. Sundown towns are a really unique phenomenon in American history in that they were so widespread but so little documented. For instance, there were signs all across the country and even one in Grants Pass that said, N-word, don't let the sun come down on you here. And despite our knowledge of potentially hundreds of those signs, there isn't actually a picture of one of them in American circulation. And so unlike the whites-only, blacks-only signs in the Jim Crow South, you know, for some reason, we did not take a picture of any of these sundown signs outside of the South. And, you know, why that is, you know, my best sort of guess is that this sort of racial exclusion, this sort of racial separatism was just considered so normal that it didn't feel like it was worth taking a picture of because you didn't document ordinary life. And so most of Oregon, large portions of non-urban settings in the United States were sundown towns. And so if you are over the age of 65, you have stories that will help us understand this history and be able to pass it on to future generations.
Well, it's quite interesting because there's a lot of hidden history that we don't want to talk about. Well, when I say we, white Americans, particularly white Oregonians, do not want to talk about this history. And yet we have to if we're going to transform those inherited conditions from our grandparents and parents into the kind of future conditions that we want. But Jeff, there's still a lot of fear among those who have controlled the narrative about this nation for many generations, which is why this history continues to hide in plain sight.
We're seeing this fear being amplified at a national, a level and political level as we speak. speak, which is very, very unfortunate. I want to agree with Taylor. Yeah, those signs were not considered unusual because, you know, it was so pervasive, that attitude. And not only in Southern Oregon, not only in Oregon, but all over the country, Midwest, everywhere, you have these sundown towels. Now, they were not sundown laws on the books, but they were unwritten laws. Because if they'd been written down, they could have been challenged and found unconstitutional under the 14th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But it was an unwritten law, and they were enforced under simply a sheriff or a chief of police going out and saying, you know, you need to leave town, and we don't know you, we don't want you here. You need to leave town or you're going to find yourself in the jail overnight. And then we can, you know, take you out to the city limits and send you on your way. So that's how the sundown towns worked. And, you know, Southern Oregon, I don't know if you want me to talk about this. Southern Oregon has a justified reputation for racist history. But it's unusual that in the 1850s, and into the 1860s, Southern Oregon, Jackson County, had for a good long period there during the early mining days the largest black population in Oregon. And that was due to free blacks coming up from California to work in the mines in Southern Oregon, and in some cases, white slave owners bringing their African-American slaves with them to work in the mines.
Was that alongside the Chinese working in the mines here in Southern Oregon?
Yes, it was. But the population of Chinese miners became much, much larger here in Southern Oregon than the black population in the mines.
My guests are Taylor Stewart, founder and executive director of the Oregon Remembrance Project, and Dr. Jeff LaLand, a former SOU adjunct professor and retired historian and archaeologist for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest. So, Jeff, what happened to the black workers and the Chinese workers that seemed like a multicultural melting pot right here in Southern Oregon?
Well, the mining boom, the gold rush, dissipated, as gold rushes tend to do. And the population, the numbers of miners decreased, and the kind of mining, don't want to get into the weeds with mining technology, decreased. And it became more financially rewarding to hire large crews of Chinese workers to dig the mining ditches and so on and so forth. And other Chinese groups were mining on their own. But, of course, that basically got ratcheted down with the Chinese Exclusion Act in the early 1880s. So you had a Black Exclusion Act, and after the kind of free-for-all of the early mining period here, any remnant blacks, with some notable exclusions who remained here, like Ben Johnson out in the Applegate Valley, some did make a home here. But many others would have, pretty much looked for greener pastures elsewhere because of the racial climate.
I heard a story about Ben Johnson and a mountain that was named after him. Is that true?
That's true, yes. It originally had the name given of N-word Ben Mountain, and it's out there kind of in the neighborhood of Rouche out in the Applegate Valley. And then in the 1960s, I believe, the U.S. Board of Geographic Names changed some of those names, and it became Negro Ben. And then more recently, more history was found about Ben Johnson. We actually finally knew his last name from this wonderful historical research. And so with that, the name was changed, and properly so in my thinking, to Ben Johnson Mountain.
Okay, it sounds like we're evolving, albeit very slowly. Taylor, tell me about the process for towns and cities to transform from this culture of a sundown town to a culture of a sunrise.
Yeah, so I believe that there are three R words within this idea of reconciliation: remembrance, repair, and redemption. Remembrance, understanding the harm that was caused; repair, putting an end to the harm as it continues; and redemption, creating good from a story of harm. And so right now, for the communities who have undertaken the Sunrise Project, we are in that first R of remembrance. My hope is to be able to place historical markers in each of the communities who are participating in the Sunrise Project to discuss that community's history of racial exclusion as well as Oregon's larger history of exclusion, but then to have that marker also function as that community's stated commitment to inclusivity, or Sunrise commitment, a commitment to how we want to treat one another. And so right now, as we do this history collection, this education about the history of sundown towns, we're still in the remembrance phase of reconciliation, but we're setting the grounds for that second stage of repair, where we address the ways that that historical exclusion is still manifesting itself today. And so I'm really excited about the things that we've been able to do so far in terms of connecting with the education systems, the law enforcement systems in these communities, the business sectors, so that we can hopefully create communities where our agencies, our institutions, are also reflecting the Sunrise vision.
And that's happening here in Ashland. It's also happening in Grants Pass, right?
Yes, yes. So we have the Sunrise Project in Grants Pass, Ashland, and this past October we expanded to LeGrand and Pendleton in Eastern Oregon.
So this cultural transformation, remember, repair, redemption, that's starting to happen. And we're just, you know, a couple of generations. This is from our grandparents who were growing up in these sundown towns that Jeff was talking about. So, Taylor, what's the outcome that you envision from the work that you're doing, and how soon?
Yeah, so, you know, we are really taking a long-term approach to this work. What does it mean to truly change the identity of a community? And so with this work is, you know, I don't think this work ever ends. The reconciliation is more of a process and less of an endpoint. And so we really don't have an endpoint for how this work should play out. It is just an identity that we think will transform communities. And so I hope that by, you know, as the years go on, that there will be more Black cultural expression. Black people will feel more like they are a part of the local identity, that they aren't supplemental entities within the community. And so I really hope that we can make gains in improving the experience of people of color, and that hopefully these communities will be able to be better at both recruiting and retaining their African-American population.
Excellent. We have about a minute left. Jeff, what do you recommend for getting schools across Oregon to incorporate a holistic approach to teaching history, civics, social studies, and economics through a lens of racial context?
Well, I hate to say this, but given the current situation politically in this country and the crusade against alleged wokeness and DEI and so forth, there may be some pushback or reluctance to do anything, but I think it needs to be done, and it needs to be presented in just a common sense. We are all Americans, and this is part of the history of our culture, our nation, and that it's only to the better of all of us that we look at everybody and our community.
Yeah, no blame, no shame. We all inherited a society that none of us are responsible for creating, but we are responsible for the society that we leave to future generations. Unfortunately, we're out of time for the exchange today. Thank you, Taylor, and thank you, Jeff.
Thank you so much.
My guests were Taylor Stewart, founder and executive director of the Oregon Remembrance Project, and Dr. Jeff LaLand, a former SOU adjunct professor and retired historian and archaeologist for the Rogue River Siskiyou National Forest.